I've always been kind of an entrepreneur, and I have an entrepreneurial spirit. So I always take charge of anything that I'm doing. You know, they don't used to give me manager. I'm always my own manager, and I try to get things done as well as I can and deadlines and target. People that have money right now, whether we like it or not, they're a bit older. They are between their 40s and 60s, and they're used to dividends, they're used to stock market. So all this stepped in, and then you don't see anything for 4 years, and then you're not even sure. And then you're not even allowed to be W founder, and all those things, it's new to them. Most of them don't even understand the underlying technology stack that I used to build these businesses. So it's a very elusive world. Remember, we are young. You know, I think people forget this. We compare ourselves to, I don't know who we are comparing ourselves to, but we are a young ecosystem. So it's time we will improve things naturally.
Our guest on today's episode of the podcast is Victor Karim, the Executive Director of Lagos Angel Network. Victor was previously the manager of the Future Africa Collective, where he led investment of more than $5 million into startups like Bamboo and Empower. During our conversation, he shared his tips for getting ahead in professional settings and how to identify good investors. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, and it's a pleasure to meet you virtually. So I'd like to start with this would probably be the easiest question. How would you describe yourself? This is on a personal level now. How would you describe yourself?
I think I am I'll toot my horn a bit, where I think I'm a calm guy.
Okay.
Loving. I would describe myself as a loving person. And what else? Curious. Very curious as well.
Okay. Calm, loving, and curious. I get the curious part because of your job, but how do you stay calm and loving in Lagos?
Very good question. Very good question. It's not easy. First thing I would advise is to put yourself in a calm environment, which I do. I live in a kind of isolated, far from town. Very nice space here, so very quiet and nice. That helps to center me. And then just do other things that help to center you as well. Meditation, prayer, you know, they are all very good tools to help to calm me down.
Okay. All right. So I'd like to get a sense of your professional journey. What roles do you currently hold, and what has the journey been up to this point?
Okay. So I'm currently the executive director at Lagos Angel Network. I'm founder, very passive founder at the African Telegraph. Also co-founder of another startup that I'm not sure I can mention here. But, you know, helping them and initial investor as well. We're still in stealth mode, so I can't talk about it. But yeah, those are my roles. The main one, though, is executive director at Lagos Angel Network.
Okay, so what have you done before now? How did you get to be the executive director of Lagos Angel Network?
Yeah, so before now, my major, I think the one that would stand out in tech community more would be Future Africa. I was the manager at Future Africa. But, you know, my career started out in investment banking, you know, came in as an analyst. I was a quick study right from when I finished school. So I grew fast within the organization. I was in what they call corporate finance, helping to raise funds for SMEs mostly, actually, but more like medium scale enterprises. Did well there. And then one of the directors asked me to start, you know, I basically co-founded the lending company with one of the directors from the investment bank while I was still there. The lending company did well as well. I grew to be the head of operations there, basically like the COO. And, you know, we raised some money. We're doing basic consumer lending, digital lending, and then some SME lending as well. So it was from my experience with investment banking and SME lending that I realized that I capital allocation is something that I really want to get into seriously. Debt was good, and I realized that, you know, it's a tool for funding, but a lot of the SMEs, and we would work with them, especially from the investment banking side, to get their business ready. I realized that a lot of them would be better off with equity than with debt. So, you know, I wanted to get into equity funding. Between that period, I worked with, you know, between the period between when I left the lending company and when I got to Future Africa, I consulted with different firms. But eventually, someone called Caleb Zipperstein, who was a venture partner at Future Africa, I reached out to him, and I had been watching a lot of what he had been doing. The ecosystem was someone I really looked up to. So yeah, things progressed from there. I got in, did the interview, you know, I got in as an associate, but with time, and there I was just helping to support investors, talk to them, help to, you know, manage their risk with our founders, and helping to raise, you know, the fund as well. Then I grew to manage the collective, which was our community of angel investors. And we had community events for them, we present deals for them. Minimum ticket was $2,500. And then, yeah, after that, Future Africa changed models a bit. I met Kola Aina at an event and got contacted later. And he was basically telling me that he feels that I have transferable skills from what I've done at the collective to Lagos Angel Network. So, you know, I thought it was a big opportunity for me, especially because of everything I've learned from the ecosystem so far, and everyone I've met. I thought it was an opportunity to kind of, you know, influence on a bigger scale how things are done within the ecosystem. So I was very honored to take it, you know, and I met the rest of the board, Biola Alapi, Yemi Terry, he's also on the board, Olumide Soyombo. The rest is history.
While you were speaking about your journey, you mentioned that you're a quick study. I actually have two questions from what you just said. You've had a lot of growth in a very short time. What would you say are some qualities that helped you from when you got into investment roles to this point? What are some qualities that have helped you stand out and accelerated your growth?
Two things. I would say one, ownership, and two, awareness. Okay. I've always been kind of an entrepreneur, and I have an entrepreneurial spirit. So I always take charge of anything that I'm doing. You know, they don't used to give me manager. I'm always my own manager, and I try to get things done as well as I can and beat deadlines and targets. So I think ownership has taken me really far, because I always take responsibility for everything. And that helps me to, and if you're owning the project that you're doing, you know, people will be watching you, right? If you handle this really well, they'll give you something bigger. You handle that really well, they'll give you something bigger. So that's the growth that you're seeing. It's just more challenges, right? But yeah, and then awareness, just being honest with yourself about what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and not getting fuzzy. You know, there are going to be a lot of challenges, and you need to be able to tell yourself, okay, I'm not good at this. This is something I need to learn, or this is something I need to partner with someone to get it done. You know, that way you're not being delusional and slowing down yourself. So, yeah.
Okay. Awareness and taking ownership. Interesting. So you also mentioned that you had some early experience with lending to businesses, and you found that while debt was good, the businesses would do well with equity investment. So let's dwell on that for a bit. What is the difference between equity and debt investments? And what kind of business do you think is more suited to the two forms of financing?
Yeah, so debt financing is better for later stage businesses. You know, just basically, if I'm putting it simply, it's better for businesses that are able to produce steady cash flow. So it might even be an early stage business, maybe not too early, like beginning, but in a bit, there's a medium stage before you've gotten stability, the stability point, and get debt. Because if you're, as far as you're able to predict steady cash flow, and you've had that maybe for the past 6 months or 12 months, you know, it's okay, right? But equity is better for a startup, right? Where, you know, you're taking a lot of risk, you're doing something new or innovative, right? You can't have, and yeah, so that's why I noticed that you can't have the pressure of debt, you know, oh, I have to, you know, it brings a lot of short term. And this is something that I saw a lot. It brings a lot of short term thinking, right? People don't think, oh, what more can I do? They don't try to build foundations really well. They just say, oh, what's the best thing I can do to let earn, you know, 5,000 or 10,000? And they just start doing that. So they get into this trading mentality as opposed to a long-term, you know, business mentality. Like, what can this really turn into, right? So that's why I said later stage. So when you're a startup and you've done something innovative and then it has gotten to a stable point, you've found the product market fits and you've gotten to a stable point of constant growth, and then you can then get debt to service some of the things you're doing to generate revenue. That would, you know, that one is easier. It's just math. But, you know, if you're at the earlier stages, you're still trying to figure out what the product is that the market wants, you know, still trying to figure out your team, you know, all sorts of things, you're not going to want to deal with debt investors or, you know, debt people. And that's what you see a lot of SMEs, you know, startups are one thing, but SMEs deal with that as well. Because the only difference really is they are both trying to start businesses that scale, right? The only difference is one is dealing with technology, one isn't, which also limits their skill, but scale. Yeah.
Okay. So in your LinkedIn About section, you mentioned that you've led the deployment of more than $5 million into startups. Yeah. So I'd like to know what was the process? And even now that you're at Lagos Angel Network, what's the process like from deal sourcing to fund commitment? And second question would be, just pick three startups that you've worked on their investment process and then explain the decision-making process behind it.
Okay, so the process between sourcing, so at Future Africa, we had an investment team. I was part of the investment team, but I was focused on fundraising. Okay. So we didn't have that. So, sorry, we had, I won't call it the dichotomy, but we had that bit of separation, right? So they made the decisions and I just trusted that they were doing the right thing. They had made the right decision. We had a very competent team, Mozart. At the time it was Adenike Sheriff, which is also, she's also very good. There was an IC and I was on the IC, but just to explain the process, the deals come in through either our portal, our deal portal, or introductions to founders that we already have in our portfolio. We review the deal. It goes through initial analysis by our analysts, you know, see if there's the market size, market opportunity there, you know, review the business, do some diligence, you know, do some customer interviews, whatever it is that needs to be done, depending on the particular business. Obviously, you also interview the founders, meet the team, you know, and so that all that just goes on that initial diligence. Then you put together a memo, right? The analysts put together a memo if they want to consider the business. Once you put together that memo, they then present it or bring it to the IC. Then the IC makes the decision as to whether the IC is really the partners in that fund. So they make, so I was in the IC, but I didn't get a voting right at Future Africa. I was in the IC, but I didn't get a voting right. Lagos Angel Network, I didn't get a voting right actually making the decision. But yeah, I would be part of the process of just seeing it happen. And then once it's time, it will go to, once the decision is made, it will either be funded directly from the fund or it will go to the collective. And the collective will present the deals to our members. They will have the opportunity to indicate interest. And then we would do a question and answer session with the investors and founders. And then after that's done, we'll then start raising for the deal. So we'll do it either through angel, you know, there are different ways, the angel list, World Bank, to syndicate. You know, and once that's done, close it and then send it to them. The wires are done to the family.
Okay. So
between the point where you make a commitment and where the founders get the money, how long does that typically take?
Between commitments and money in, it could be about, I think, maximum like 4 weeks.
4 weeks. Okay. So what makes it
take? You want it optimally. What is it? This is a process, especially if you're syndicating. That's why sometimes we do it directly from the fund, right? But if you're syndicating, you know, angels sometimes are traveling, you know, you have to give them time and they go through, oh, there's a whole KYC process. Oh, did I not mention that? Okay, so when they commit this KYC, and then they have to do all that, yeah. So, and that for the first time. So, if you're investing for the first time, you do your KYC, they ask you for your details. But if you're doing it after, then it's very depending on the platform that you're using, it usually just goes straight. So, the KYC can take time. Sometimes investors are traveling, you know, they do one today, they do another one the next day. And I think wires can also take time. Because that's not really in our control, the bank.
Yeah. Okay. So what were, at Future Africa, what were three startups that you worked on that you were very impressed with and maybe you had a very good feeling about investing in them?
Good question. Pick three. Hello. Okay. I like MailRD. I like Bamboo.
Okay.
I like Empower, right? Actually, I think I would put Empower first. It's just, yeah. So Empower was Mr. Easy's record label. What he does basically is lending, but lending to artists. And the reason why I liked it so much was I have a lot of artist friends that could use that kind of thing, right? You know, they get some money, easy to get their equipment, easy to record some kind of projects, and then Empower also distributes for you, right? They also just, so yeah, they will help push it out and then get their repayments from the revenues of the project, the scale of the project, whatever it is. And then so it helps acting, because I think there's a real market for, and you know, it's what I'm working on here at LAN. I think there's a real market for media tech, for artists and media tech. So how are artists being funded? You know, is there a platform that can help them do this better? And that's why when NFTs was a conversation, I was really excited about that because I felt like something that artists could leverage. Now, unfortunately, the ecosystem, they are not so big on all these things anymore. But I believe it's come back. I'm hoping it's a comeback because I think it has some use cases for artists. SmileID, they did identification for KYC. So basically helping to verify customers for KYC. So they verify customers. And I think that was important because I'm a very infrastructure-led person. I think especially because of where we are, geography, right? I don't think we have a lot of infrastructure for building the next generation of startups. I think honestly, when I'm looking at startups, I'm looking at people that are doing the things that need done first, right? That are building the foundations or whatever. So Flutterway was a good example of that. The other stuff, so SmileID, I think, was doing that for identity verification. And I thought they were doing a really good job. Yeah, which other one did I call? Bamboo was wealth management. That one, I think it was just more the team. You know, and they allowed people to do US. It was just the buzz around when I got in and we're raising the Bamboo deal. It seemed really great. So I just, you know, that just left an impression for me. So that's it.
Okay. So what do you think makes a good investor? What are some qualities that let's not use good, a great investor. What do you think makes a great investor?
I would say, so I'm able to tell this one, I said restraint, right? So, yeah, but restraint, I think would fall under the general thing of kind of discipline. You have to know what your investment rules are and you have to stick with them. The stages, the asset classes, you know, the frequency, all those things. Investment is a game of patience, and which is the second point, patience and time, and it compounds, right? So that's one. I would say discipline, one, two, patience, and three, research, information. If you invest the soil, the nutrition of investment is information. If you don't have the right information, you cannot make the right decision. So yeah, you need to, whether it's from people, whether it's from research, whether it's from data, which is a problem that I feel that we have in Africa, is that we don't have enough data. And we don't prioritize data and research as much as we should. But we are very big on people, getting information from people and all that. But yeah, getting information is the new trend of investing.
So you're a member of Young African Catalyst, and one of its goals is to train upcoming venture capitalists in Africa. Why do you think this goal or this mission is necessary?
Well, it's important because we see in general, so everything is ecosystem based, right? Everything is community based. I mean, you're looking at, there are founders and there are investors, and coming into the community, you would see that investors aren't as sensitive as they could be. And I'm not talking about the ones that, I'm not talking about the ventures platform, the future of Africa, right? I'm just saying, my point here is they are, you know, we could do better in understanding the environment and founders and helping them to go through it and helping, giving advice to founders that is more applicable, right? So as founders, they are going to always want to come for support from investors. They're always going to want to come for any kind of partnerships or things like that. You have to be best positioned to be able to help a founder in that place, right? So it's not just about saying, oh, I know this, I know about valuations, I know how to do investment memos, I know how to write a venture capitalist. It's about choosing a niche, right? Choosing the things that you know best about and being able to provide that support to the founders as effectively as you can. So basically supporting them to get to your financial goal. And I think to get to that point as an investor, you do need some level of training, but an extended period of time. And I think communities like Young African Catalyst will help to do just that.
Okay. So just before we continue with my own questions, I have a question from one of our readers, and the person wants to know what are some of the factors that you consider as an investor before you make a decision on whether to invest in a startup or whether not to invest.
So one is, let me make it three broad based things. All right. So one is the market opportunity, right? Is there an actual market for the thing that you're building? Right. And remember I said one of the things that drives me forward is awareness. So like you have to be very honest with yourself about this. How many people, a lot of people don't also look at the competition, right? A lot of decks that I see, it's not like the idea is bad or what they are doing is bad, but you know, what's the difference? This other business that has been existing for 5 years could literally add a feature to their already existing product and it will obliterate your business. So you look at the market opportunity and if they are doing something truly new, right? The second is the strategy, right? Like how they are going about. I always talk about go-to-market, right? How they're going about, you know, acquiring their customers, who they're partnering with, you know, and that goes a lot into the third point, which is the team, the CEO, right? The CEO, the people that are in charge, how do they think? How do they execute, right? That is what we, because again, you can have two really great startups, really good ideas, but one is more effective than the other and they win market share faster. That's the one you want to invest in. And you usually know that through their strategy and their plan. And then thirdly, through the team, right? What is the experience of the founders and of the managing team, right? Or management team, rather, you know, how how many are they able to swim fast in this ocean? Are they going to be, you know, stumbling around aimlessly until they find something, right? Are they the best people that are, you know, best suited to solve this problem? Are you passionate about the problem? These are things you ask. And, you know, there are things that you can best of all meet in person or by talking to them or by, you know, working with them over some period.
Okay, so having worked as both a VC and an angel investor, you've worked with both VCs and angel investors, what would you say are the differences between the approach employed by these two groups of investors?
So VCs are, VCs, I think, you know, their priority is to, put simply, angel investors can be longer term, can have a longer term view than venture capitalists, right? Venture capitalists, they're trying to return the fund and it's more of a business, right? As an angel investor, you have the luxury of calming down and choosing, you know, only choosing the businesses that you really believe in and supporting those businesses as much as possible. We actually wrote an article about this. Lan wrote an article about this, about the differences between angel investors and the advantages angel investors have over venture capitalists. And, you know, one was this long-term view, right? Elon Musk was an angel investor. The first, he was an angel investor. Well, you know, he had the fund, but he really believed, Sean Carter, I think, yeah, was the first angel really that was interested in Facebook and brought it to and connected to Peter Thiel, right? So it's always angel investors that first see that vision from a founder and they're able to follow it longer term, right? They're able to put up with the founder that this is a bit less forgiving, and it's just because, not because they want to be, it's just because how their structure is set up. You know, they are looking for returns, they're looking for exit for their LPs so that they can raise the next one. So that's where their mind is at. And you see a lot of VCs try to come down to that angel level because it's really the best place to be. Right? That's why, so where VC and angel investment meet is kind of like venture building. You know, so that's where a lot of people are trying to get in venture building or something like that, just so that they can be more involved with founder, help them grow, have better control and all that. So that's basically what those are the differences.
Okay. So much of the venture capital, now I'm referring to Nigeria, much of the venture capital is concentrated in Lagos. I mean, it's not like there aren't startups outside Lagos, but they just do not get as much capital as startups in Lagos. So what are some of the factors that you think has contributed to this, and how can state governments now ensure that they attract more investments to startups there?
So I think, I mean, obviously they could increase the ease of doing business in those places, work on the infrastructure. I could say all that, but I think Nigeria, if I'm giving a practical answer, and I'm not saying, you know, improving infrastructure and improving ease of doing business is not practical for Nigeria. It is, but where we are now, where we are using 84%, 87% of our revenue to service debts, you know, it's not going to be an easy thing to do for the government. So I think actually, hubs, non-profit organizations like VAN, I think those people are in best position to actually help to improve the environment. So like Ventures Platform now has a hub in Venture Farm in Abuja. When I was there, I used to go there all the time. Very nice environment. And you're sure to meet a lot of other techies. You know, it's a very conducive place for innovation. Right. And then, but that's even on the founder side. And that's kind of like the ease of doing business. But on the investor side, you know, is where angel networks come up, because there are investors in each state. They just don't know about this asset class. of technology stocks, so technology equity. So he's educating them, and you know, LAN has a mandate for the whole of Nigeria, not just Lagos. We are just starting from Lagos or restarting from Lagos. But, you know, our goal is that everyone, like you said, should be able to get funded regardless of the state that they are currently in. And I think, yeah, so like I was saying, angel networks, I think, have a role to play in that investor group, because not all of them are angel networks. You know, so investor groups, just educating people about what technology stocks can do for them and how they work. Because another thing is, I was at an event the other day, and Nigerian investors that, you know, I was listening to an investor speak, and, you know, Nigerian investors are a bit, people that have money right now, whether we like it or not, they're a bit older. They are between their 40s and 60s, and they're used to dividends, they're used to stock market. So all these steps in, and then you not see anything for 4 years, and then you're not even sure. And then you're not even allowed to be the W founder and all this. All those things, they are new to them. Most of them don't even understand the underlying technology stack that are used to build these businesses. So it's a very elusive world. So it's also a thing of time. The younger generation do better, right? And education for the ones that we currently have, right? Just letting them know, okay, this is how it is. Putting in also governance frameworks to Fortune founders so they don't take investors for granted. You know, I just not going to eat those things. Nigeria Startup Act is out, you know, it helped as well create more of an environment to stimulate startup activities. So stuff like that, you know, would slowly move the ecosystem. But remember, we are young, you know, people, I think people forget this. We compare ourselves to, I don't know who we are comparing ourselves to, honestly, but we are a young ecosystem. So it's time will improve things naturally.
Okay. So what do you think founders can do to identify the right investors? Because we hear stories of investors who are basically the reason a business doesn't grow or even stay alive for long enough. So what do you think a founder can do to ensure that they get the right investors?
I think as a founder, you should be interviewing your investors as just that. I know it, you know, founders might not find this very practical because, you know, you're trying to raise capital. But I think, you know, you should be interviewing your investors just as much as they're interviewing you. And you should make sure that they understand your business. Well, like they have, I want to say empathy for your business, right? Like they get what you're trying to do. And they want to support you actually, you know, in that way, when you have an investor, especially at the earliest stages, you have, you know, a mentor, you have a coach, you have someone that would, you know, drive you along and actually help rather than stop you. I think you have to also formalize as much as possible the relationship, you know, put things in on paper, agreement, you know, so that nothing is left undefined, right? If everything is defined, then the investor doesn't really have the space to misbehave, quote unquote, right? So I would say those two things. But mostly, right, only remember as a founder, the only thing you're doing is pitching, and not every investor is going to. It's the nature of the business. Not every investor is going to get, right? But there are those that will, and that's what you're looking for. So you're not looking for money at all costs, right? You're looking for the right money, right? So if you focus your energy and focus your mind on that, you'll find those kind of.
Okay. I was reading an article earlier by the Lagos Angel Network, and it was talking about disruptive innovation and how founders can think about it. So how do you think that plays out for Nigerian founders? And can you just give me a few examples that you have seen of disruptive innovation?
Yeah, so I think, so if you notice on that, when you go to Africa, right, what were the things, you know, we talk about disruptive, you want to think about disruptive innovation in the US, you know, you think about virtual virtual reality, augmented reality, you think about AI, you think about robotics, you think about this, think about, so it, what I'm trying to say is there's context to it for each week, right? And it depends on your stage of credibility, right? So in Africa, I always say, you know, we need to be as simple, we need to be simpler. When we go to the African one, we're talking about telecommunication, we're talking about mobile phones and mobile money, right? As the thing. And in that case, right, it's disruptive innovation because it has changed the way people think. It has created a new market. It has created new opportunities, new types of customers. That's really what innovation is about. If you read, the beginning of the article, it tells you that you have to understand the customers. And again, I'll reiterate that this is just what I, this is why I feel that startups just don't do enough of, and you know, founders don't prioritize enough. Understanding, I think a lot of founders decide what they want to build and try to force it on the market, and they want to be like the geniuses, right? Figured out something. But I think a lot of times you get into the market and your hypothesis, what you thought was wrong, and you need to adjust and just keep trying to build what customers, what the audience that you're trying to build for is asking for. Eventually, you'll find product market fit. Right. But if you're not flexible, you won't. So anyway, my point is disruptive innovation in Africa would be simple. Right. It's the thing that will change the way people think about their lives. So a good example would be, and again, how do I put it? Again, I've seen these startups are very rare to find, right? Flutterwave, for example, changed the way people made payment. And Della changed the way people thought about earning. And the old school does the same thing, right? I think these are disruptive. The technology that they're using isn't new, but they are disruptive to the society that they exist in. Do you understand? If you're changing people's minds, you're changing their income, you're changing their outcomes on a daily basis, you're changing their habits. Right. That's disruptive. And I think about so anything under education, we can change, for example, the way people think about education. I'll give free startup ideas. Like, for example, a startup that can make people realize, like Africans realize that you can learn on the internet. That the internet is actually a global book. You don't have to, as a Nigerian, you don't have to be limited. You're not limited to Nigeria. You can learn anything. You can use guitar that you buy from MTN and grow and learn anything to use to service customers all over the world. People don't, like, it's not yet ingrained in people's mind that this is the possibility. You don't have to go to school. You don't have to confine, you know, all those institutions are becoming useless. And that's why, like, I think even the future of finance won't be with like funds and institutions. I think it'll be personal. Because as people realize more and more that they have personal power, they would want to leverage it to do more. So yeah, so that's just an example. Like education, that's an example in the education space. That there could be examples in the media space. There could be examples in the health space. Right. And I've met a few of them already. I've seen business models that are doing great stuff there. Right. So that's how I see it. So that's what disruptive innovation will look like in Africa. Not always, you know, we are building, you know, a solution to help customers pay on e-commerce channels. I mean, it's there, it's good, it's fine. And the ones that do that best will do that. But there are so many problems. There's electricity. Digga, people don't have lights. Who are the people that are helping to solve that? It's a tech problem. You get, it's just that people are not willing to put their this thing. So there are a lot of things to solve. And once we start as a society seeing a lot of these things as not just government issues, when you ask me what can government do, I said it, but I would rather see what private people can do. Because at the end of the day, we have to try and push our own agenda. You know, we have to try and create the world that we want to see within our own space. So I'm using venture capital to do that. And I've others will try to do the same.
Okay. So investing in Africa is a very tough task. and you have political instability to consider, have uncertain regulatory environment. So how can investors protect against that? How can they ensure that they are not discouraged and that they're also not losing their investments while investing?
Investment business model. I think a good business model is regulation. Well, yeah, you know, it's not regulation proof because it could use Bokada as a case study. You know, they were not doing anything wrong and government just. But again, yeah, Max, you know, Max still was able to pivot. It won't be, you know, with that whole, you know, ban of Okada and all that. So that's what I was saying about the team. Right. So if you invest in the right team and the right business, it's recession proof, you know, all those things proof. It doesn't really matter. It's only a quote unquote weak business that shakes, you know, over things. If you're growing, you're growing. And the economy, I think even with everything that is growing, we're still growing at 2%, but slow comparatively. But, you know, growth is bound to happen, right? We're growing, we're developing the economy. So as far as the companies that you're investing in are at that edge of growth, I think you're always going to be fine. That's my general theory. Of course, you can always protect against currency. You can always, you know, make sure you're abreast of regulation. You know, that's an advantage of being in angel networks and that you have people within those circles that will be able to warn or, you know, give forewarnings to founders and investors to be able to know how best to do this thing. We can talk about partnership between venture capital funds and, you know, government legislative institutions, you know, all those things are there, right? And they are already happening, right? But, you know, all in all, I would just say invest the right business is proof of what is, you know, isn't going to be concerned with a lot of these issue. They will always find a way to grow and evolve. So yeah.
Okay. Final question would be, how can investors optimize for an exit? Because ultimately that's what most investors want, if not all investors. They all want an exit. So how can they optimize for an exit in an immature economy like Africa?
I've been getting that question a lot. The first thing would be to, you know, make the market more liquid, bring in more capital. And that would only come from having better opportunity. Again, I keep saying, I feel like we are always trying to jump. I feel like we are trying to, especially in tech ecosystem, I think we are trying to jump stages. You know, let's start from the fundamental. We want exits, but nobody will have to beg for exits from a good company. From a company that's doing very well, right? If you're doing well, you're going to become global. You're going to keep growing. You're going to keep posting numbers. You're always going to have investors that want to get in as far as they have not paid to, right? So it's just creating the structure for a secondary, for a structured secondary market, which can be done, right? I even know institutions that are doing, I think LAN might even get into that, but getting the liquidity is the first thing, right? And getting liquidity for all stages of the startup and just enabling those infrastructure to be built. So yeah, you know, building the right, getting the right opportunities, attracting the capital into the continent, you know, so that there's more than enough to get it to a place where investors are waiting for an opportunity to buy into a company, right? And even the investors that in that company don't even want to go out because they are riding the wave of the people. When you get to a place where the market is at that kind of level, you know, then it's just a matter of creating structures that will allow to allow that happen easy. I don't know if you get. So yeah, we have to develop the market, keep massaging. Because at the end of the day, global investors are looking for profit. They're looking to, you know, make their fund. They're looking for extended growth. They're looking for extended alpha. Do you understand? And it's better, it's best in emerging economy because we are coming from so far. So imagine if you're able to get a startup to grow from 2% to 50%, 60%, and it's mostly in developed economies like US, UK, Germany, you know, Europe. The growth is in between, they are inching forward, because they are always at the edge. So they are just inching forward. But in Africa, we have a long way to go. So the potential is there and they want to come, but we need to develop ourselves, the market, well enough so that we, one, have structured opportunities that can be invested in. The capital can come in easily. We have a better environment. Because to be honest, you know, the media and the stories about Africa, they don't help. But even with that, even with all the negative stories, we still see funds, global funds, trying to come into Africa because they know it is inevitably the future. The world is becoming a global village. Eventually, we are going to get it. It's just who is going to be at the forefront of that happening is the question. And that's what we're trying to get. So we notice most of my answers are we need to build ourselves. We need to invest in better companies. We need to build better opportunities, right? It all comes down to that. Have better opportunities, you attract more capital. Of course, there's a place for, like I keep saying, there's a place for creating the infrastructure. There's a bit to take in, absorb that capital in a structured way and in a reliable, safe way for the investors, right? But let the opportunities be there first. People will jump on the creating infrastructure. So, yeah. And this is to say the opportunities aren't there, but I think founders need to do a better job and investors as well need to do a better job of, you know, looking at the right things and not getting carried away by buzzwords or buzz feelings and stuff like that.
All right. So thank you so much for your time and thank you for coming on this podcast.
Thank you so much, Shane. It was a good conversation and looking forward to speaking to you again in the meantime.
That's it for this week's episode of Equity Merchants. If you enjoyed this conversation, you should check out other episodes of the podcast with other interesting guests. Finally, you can share this podcast on your social media. It helps more people discover it. Thanks for tuning in and see you in the next one.